Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Reassurance is knowing our pensions will be supporting you in the years ahead. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension today.
Drive Time with Katie Hannan and Cullum O'Mungoin on RTE Radio 1.
Now, football has never been bigger online, but with visibility comes a bit of a darker reality because players, journalists, referees and fans face a flood of hostile and abusive posts, much of which is normalised as part of the job. A new BBC-backed study has explored the human impact of football's digital hostility and what must change to make the game safer for everyone. Well, I'm joined for more on this by BBC sports correspondent Natalie Perks and Dr. Gary Sinclair, head of the International Network for Online Harms in Sport at the DCU Business School. Natalie, good evening to you.
Evening.
Tell us about your involvement in this.
Well, for the last few months, we've been looking at the issue of social media abuse. It was driven by a couple of big moments that happened. For example, the racial abuse that the England defender Jess Carter received during the summer, during the Euros. And we wanted to take a better look at it, essentially. So we commissioned a company called Signify. They're a data science company, to monitor all public posts on Instagram, X, Facebook and TikTok across just one weekend. It was the 8th and 9th of November. So there were 10 Premier League matches and there were 6 Women's Super League matches. And they use a system called their threat matrix to filter what they think could be abusive. So overall that weekend, there were around 500,000 messages about these 16 games. This threat matrix AI system checked about 22,000 of them. And then humans did a triage system and went through all those 22,000 to find 2,015 were considered verified abuse, so abusive they broke those community guidelines of the social media platforms. And actually 39 of those were considered so egregious that they required further investigation, including one which was ultimately flagged to the police.
What kind of stuff are you talking about?
That's the interesting thing, I think, because a lot of people will say, well, it's free speech, you're allowed to say what you want about people. We're not talking here about footballers or fans saying a footballer had a terrible game or you were rubbish in that game. What a terrible game you had when you gave away that penalty. We're talking about 125 messages per game that contained references to things like wanting someone to die or appalling racist language or homophobic slurs. We saw, for example, someone said that Liverpool striker Alexander Isak should hang. That's all it said. Isak's to blame. He should hang. Like I say, some of the most horrific racist, violent words.
That's very heavy stuff, yeah. Isn't it?
Is this new, Natalie? Or is just the extent of it new?
It's not new. We knew it was happening. I think we just wanted to get a snapshot of how often it was happening. And I think we were sort of taken aback, really, by how much there was. Like I say, it was just 16 games. And interestingly, whenever we talk about this kind of stuff, often you'll hear people say, well, it's from abroad. You're getting a lot of it's coming from Africa, for example. We found actually 61% of the verified abuse was from the UK and Ireland. But there were 13 countries represented, including Turkey, Germany, Nigeria. But yeah, 61% from the UK and Ireland. So I think that really did almost bring it home more than perhaps what we've been told in the past.
And are football clubs themselves trying to get on top of this?
Yes, because I think they've realised that if they wait for the social media companies to actually do something about it, they'll be waiting for quite some time. So we are starting to see now, certainly in the Premier League and now in the Women's Super League as well, Arsenal have actually been working with Signify, the company we did our study with, for 3 years. And even though they've seen a 25% year-on-year rise in abuse coming into the system, they're actually themselves saying they're seeing a 90% reduction in their own fans sending the abuse. And that's because they're taking action. When they can identify that it is one of their fans doing the abusing online, they've been able to perhaps take away their season ticket, ban them from the Emirates. And because of that, they're seeing their own fans stop that kind of action. So Chelsea women have literally just signed last week, hoping to do the same. and essentially realizing that they can't wait. They can't wait for social media companies to take action. They've got to do it themselves.
And have any players been willing to talk about the impact on them personally?
So I think what the interesting thing is there's quite a big difference in the women's game and the men's game. So in the men's game, you've got riches, you've got people whose social media companies are likely being run by a third party. In the women's game, there's still much more of a connection between the fans and the players. And in many cases, the women are still running their own social media. So I heard of, for example, a very high profile female player who had a direct message just before she went out onto the pitch, and it showed a picture of her flat saying, "I know where you live." And she was, of course, terrified for the whole of the game she then had to go and play, but she then needed security and didn't want to go home. So she was directly impacted by that, whereas a lot of the men, we've heard Erling Haaland, for example, the City striker, making light of it, making a joke of it. And a lot of the managers we spoke to, such as Arne Slot, said they don't have social media for this reason. Ruben Amorim, the Manchester United boss, said, you know, to protect himself, to survive was the words he used. He doesn't have social media so that he doesn't have to deal with this kind of abuse. So I think it's very different for the women because there is still that connection to fans.
Can we bring in Dr. Gary Sinclair, head of the International Network for Online Harms in Sport at the DCU Business School? Gary, I know you've done your own research on this. What are you finding?
Yeah, no, good evening. It's fascinating to hear about Natalie and the study that BBC and Signify did. We've done a bit of work with Signify too. Just to touch on a few things that Natalie said, you asked if this is new. Like, we've been looking at data sets for European Championships for both men's and women's football from 2009 right up until the present day. And like, it's consistently there. So it's not necessarily a new thing. It just evolves differently in terms of, I suppose, the type of targets, I suppose, in terms of how emojis and language evolves to avoid content moderation as well. But another thing that we would see, I think kind of Natalie is hinting at it, is a divide between the women's and the men's game. Like, it's great for, say, the likes of Arsenal's men's team and teams at the top of the Premier League to be able to afford the resources in which they can protect their players or educate their players around issues connected to online abuse. But as we've seen in our research, like, that's, you know, it's only very, very elite teams or clubs that are able to do this. And it's a problem that goes right through to the lower leagues, right through to even grassroots as well too. So there's a big kind of inequity in terms of being able to address the problem.
What kind of stuff's going on at grassroots level?
Yeah, like, I think academia and kind of research is trying to catch up with what's going on at grassroots level. We're probably seeing it more in our discussions with sports organisations, even outside football, even talking to people within like the GAA and motorsports, a wide number of sports, that like, this is an issue within, you know, Facebook groups, Instagram groups for kids teams and at youth level as well too, like, that there's elements of, whether it's parents or whether it's attacks on referees or even like players, kids themselves. So probably be some research on that coming down the line, probably early next year. But yeah, I think that's probably something that doesn't get as much media attention.
Right. Well, I mean, there was even our colleagues in Morning Ireland this morning reporting of an incident that included the child of a referee being harassed at school for a decision of their parent, you know, which is just shows how it'll even break out of the boundaries of social media and opinion and into real life.
Yeah, this is the thing. Like, you know, we've probably all witnessed or heard the stories of, you know, these kind of things on the sidelines, and like, typical to the professional and the elite levels, you know, it's the abuse that was typically you would experience or view in the stadium. It's moving into these online spaces, and then obviously it's amplified because just the potential for more of it, which creates an even bigger problem.
Is it something that's particularly prevalent around football, or is this right across the spectrum with sport?
It's right across the spectrum with sport, but I'd say the quantity of it is obviously at a greater level with football because it's a more popular sport and it gets higher visibility. There's also kind of a cultural element to football as well too. There's a long history of kind of violence and hooliganism and tribalism that's connected with football, and that obviously, you know, is kind of replicated within the online spaces as well too. But I think it's important to make that point that it is in a lot of different sports. Like, we do a lot of work with the FIA, who are in charge of the motorsports most motorsports, including Formula One. And like, it's a big issue for them. It's a big issue in athletics, big issue in tennis, and for different reasons. Like, so for example, like in tennis, it's a big issue because of gambling. It's a big issue in college sports in America too, because of gambling, where they have this big connection between online abuse and people who are losing, you know, accumulators and bets. Like, they're targeting amateur athletes as a result of that.
Natalie, there was an experiment done a few years back where there were comments posted online, comments made by male pundits but attributed to female journalists, and they and vice versa, and they tested people's response to them based on the gender of the person who had the opinion. And the conclusion really was that football fans felt that female pundits didn't really have a right to an opinion. There was quite a gendered aspect to it. I mean, how much of that has come up in your research about abuse targeted at female journalists in sport?
Well, I mean, obviously, as a female journalist in sport myself of 2 decades, anecdotally, I can tell you plenty of abuse that I've had for doing my job. What most of the studies show is that the abuse aimed at women online, I think there was a stat that women are 27 times more likely to receive abuse online, and it's gendered abuse. So often there will be rape threats or misogyny thrown in rather than just general abuse, if that makes sense. So women have long known that they sort of run the gauntlet of abuse if they are active online. But one of the things that did come up a lot during this investigation was a lot of people sort of saying, well, you don't need to be online. You just come off. Don't read it. Come off it. And I think we live in such a digital age where we're chronically online. But for young athletes, particularly female athletes, it is a source of income. And for them, it's a way of getting their brand out there and
for sure,
engaging
yeah.
with fans. So for them, it'd be very tricky to just ignore it and not read it.
Yeah, and yeah, I suppose removing yourself from the public space, it's the other people dishing out the abuse that maybe should take that advice rather than the person who's the target of it. Well, for now, BBC sports correspondent Natalie Perks and Dr. Gary Sinclair, head of the International Network for Online Harm in Sport at DCU, thank you both very much for joining us.